This is a reading from Whispers from Eternity, Prayer Demands by Paramahansa Yogananda. Number 60, I will broadcast my voice with the chorus of thy songs. With the soft finger touches of my soul intuition, I tuned the radio of my inner perception. At first, I caught only the sounds of nearby experiences. Then came a symphony of inner harmony, followed by sweet strains from my heart's orchestra of finer feelings. And then came the swelling chorus of my age-long cravings for thee. All these I caught on the radio of my soul as I kept running my perception, waiting to catch the whispers of thy voice, O guardian angel of all souls. With infinite patience, I went on tuning my radio. At last, when I was almost prepared to give up further trying, thy song burst upon my heart. Oh, let me broadcast through my every word now the chorus of thy song. The title of this reading this week, as you heard, is Does God Hide the Truth? And right before service, somebody who's here in the temple said to me, what's the name of the reading? So I said, Does God Hide the Truth? And everybody was quiet. And then I said, and the answer is? And Lahari behind me said, yes and no. And of course, that is the answer. Because God does hide the truth, at least early on. He's not actively hiding it. Although I did hear Jyotish say once, many years ago, he said the questions asked, why did God create the universe? And then he said, the answer is because God loves to play hide and seek. And, you know, it's really cute. I mean, when you think of it, it's interesting. My little granddaughters love to play hide and seek. They love to. And just even a couple of years ago when they were like 7 and 8, they would hide and they would find a really good hiding place. And I couldn't find them. I would look for a very long time. And they would be so enthralled with that that then every time they hid, they would hide in the same place. Like I was never going to find them in a certain way. We're all playing that game. We don't know it in the same way, but we are. And I, of course, had to play the part of looking longer and longer to keep up the excitement of the game. It's a little bit like what happens to us, because it's interesting in this reading, Swamiji quoted that phrase from Shankya philosophy, God cannot be proved. And when we're in that period, when our soul is in that period of Shankya philosophy, which I don't want this to be too depressing for too many people, but I've heard that we spend millions of lifetimes there, we are constantly trying to do just that. We're constantly trying to prove God. And we use very common tools and well-respected tools during that time. We use the mind, therefore the intellect. We try and be rational, which is also of the mind. Of course, we love science, and we still do. So we look for scientific explanations. And we spend a long time looking, our soul actually longing for that which cannot be proved. But it goes on and on. I remember the truth of this, a statement that I made, but I made this statement a few years ago, but the truth of it comes to me with ever-increasing clarity. I'll just say that. And this morning, when I heard that phrase again, this story popped back into my mind. When it was during an SRW week, and I've told this story before, but now I'm losing his name. The man who really is a physicist, Purushottama, yeah, thank you. Puru had spoken right before I was going to speak, and he gave an utterly brilliant talk about how close science was coming to understanding, keyword, consciousness, and to really grasping it in some ways, like where is all of this leading in physics? And a lot of physicists, as we now know, really are opening to this knowing of God. But he was explaining all of these tiny little particles. And when he was done and I got up to speak, I said, and this is the truth, I don't think I knew it at the time, I was playing with him really, but I said, no matter how close science comes, no matter how tiny the particles, I said, because that's what he was talking about, no matter how much of an effort in that way they make towards knowing consciousness, in a certain way, there's an absolute impossible crevice to cross between that science and truth. And that is the truth, because God cannot be proved. We cannot use science, no matter how much we would like to, no matter how desperate we are. These are all these little stories, because another story just popped in my mind that I'm going to share with you. It's actually another analogy. They're really speaking to such a deep truth, a deep knowing, a deep awareness that we have to develop to make that leap into faith that will have us really know God, and to get to that place where all we can see is truth. I was on a hike one year. Interestingly, it was up into this place called the Enchantments, which I just spoke about a couple of weeks ago in a Sunday sermon, after not thinking about that hike for years. But we made a lot of mistakes on that hike, and one of them I spoke about a few weeks ago. But after we had spent much of the afternoon up really reveling in these exquisite glacial lakes, and I was saying to my friends, it's getting late, we should really be going. And they were sort of saying to me, oh, quit worrying. And I kept saying to myself, I don't want to quit worrying. I mean, I really knew. I must have had a premonition too, but we were far from our campsite. What happened to us as we tried to go down, because there was no path. There had been many rock slides. And as we tried to go down, we would hike down a significant way, and then we'd come to this massive, is crevice the right word? I think it is, but where you just couldn't go. You could sit there just wanting to will it to close up so that you could walk straight to the campsite, but there was no way. You had to turn around, go back up to the top, and start down another path. And it's exactly what we do. We want desperately to be able to prove things with our minds. And it is during all of that time that we feel like God's hiding the truth, or life is filled with suffering, or why can't I find the path on this hike? And nobody's hiding anything, really. We just haven't developed our awareness enough yet. We haven't been willing, you know, Lahari said when she was doing the purification this morning, she was talking about getting into the Ganges and being purified by water. And she was talking about the fire that we do and being purified by fire. And she said, but it's not just the Ganges, that's the water that's going to purify you. And it's not just the fire. You have to do your part. You have to say words. I seek purification. That's a verb. We have to be doing that. We have to be seeking. And then the masters even say to us another verb. It says, you do your part. Open your heart to me. There's action in all of that. We need to be finding our way, desperately seeking God, desperately wanting God. Right now, I'm living in a world, in my world, where there is a lot of suffering around me. For many, in many places, and you've heard me speak about this, but there's a lot of illness, my own and others, and I'm around people most of the time, joyfully, heart wide open. It's perfect, and I know it's perfect, but there is no God consciousness. And I am listening to many of these people, many of them. Again, no judgment. It's important to hear that, but I'm hearing it. Speak about everything that's wrong, everything that's bad about the way the world is right now, or why having the disease is terrible. And it is terrible. It's tragic. That's in the world, in this world of separation, of duality, in the physical world. It's tragic, and my heart is right there with them. But as I listen to it over and over, my mantra has become one in a thousand, Shanti, one in a thousand. One in a thousand, Krishna says, will seek God. And if somebody is not seeking God, what they see is what is horrible, how it's bad, how it's intolerable. And the more that is affirmed, the more real it is, the more what we would call tamasic, it takes them, that soul, further and further, deeper into it. And there is no way to shine a light, speak the truth until somebody's ready to hear it. But I had one amazing experience. I mean, many, many amazing experiences. A couple of weeks ago when I was last in LA with my son-in-law, he's very ill, I've mentioned, with a widely metastatic cancer, going through a very rough three-drug regimen of chemotherapy, each drug in and of itself extremely challenging. And I was sitting on the bed speaking with him. We were talking about many things. He and I have opened to each other in ways that we haven't been anywhere near in all of the years, what's probably 20 years that I've known him, at least. I don't think we've ever said what I would consider a meaningful word to each other prior to this cancer. We've had a couple of talks about, I guess I would call it spirituality, but how we each hold God. But we weren't talking about that. We were talking about he's a professor, whether he would teach, how he might teach in September if he's able, things like that. And then right before I was ready to leave, I was sitting on the bed. He was laying down. And I saw him just put his hand, like just like this. And he and I have never touched each other. Never. Maybe we've had two hugs or something. But I'm just saying, so that I'm not exaggerating. I don't remember them. But he reached his hand over, and I just put my hand on top of his. And we sat like that for at least a minute, maybe more. It was so deep, so moving, so healing. When I left and I went back to my room, I said to myself, but wasn't really me, but what came to me was, if that's what happens for him through this cancer, which again, in this life, in this world, it's tragic, but that moment of, I want to call it God realization, even though it's not God realization the way we usually use that term, but it was. We were together in the divine. We were together in God's love with our hands on top of each other, speaking volumes. And I knew that if this whole cancer was about that moment, that that would be a great life. I don't know. We didn't say anything. I don't know how he held it, but I know how I held it outside of that realm of everything's terrible and God's hiding the truth and why does God make everything so difficult? And if there's a loving God, how many times I've heard this, why would he do this to me? This is what happens when we don't really know that nothing can happen outside of God's will. Nothing. It's impossible. So everything in life is a blessing. Everything is a gift from God. But if you don't know that, you simply can't know that. And then it looks like God's hiding the truth. And that's when people say, why would God have created us? Why would a loving God have done something this terrible? And that's when the Buddha says, the mind that asks that question could never understand the answer. But when you can find God in a moment like that, because you see, it's like the chant that the Biraj picked this morning. And let me just stop for a moment and say, the amazing beauty of being on a spiritual path, of putting your energy, your awareness, your concentration, your willpower into constantly trying to hold your awareness here, which the few people who are in this temple certainly do. All of you who are listening to some degree do, is that we deepen our attunement, which is the whole point. We cannot find the answer outside of the vibration of the divine. The vibration is the answer. And when that happens, the answer comes, the knowing. It comes in a form of true knowing and understanding, and all questions and all doubt just disappear. And what we find is that as we experience that little bit by little bit, the questioning moves away and we see our way to the truth. It's like scuba diving. You're down in the dark, and it can be very frightening. If anybody's ever dived, you know this. It's beautiful. It's utterly beautiful, and it's so still and so quiet. When I used to dive, I couldn't wait to get down there. There's nothing but the sound of your respirator, of course. You very quickly get used to it. But it's dark. But if you turn up, you might be 60 meters, 60 feet away from, no, I think it's 60 meters, the deep dives, away from that light, but you see it. And when the time comes, somebody taps you and they let you know that your tank's running out of oxygen, you really want to head towards the light. And you have to do it slowly, you have to do it thoughtfully, but you see the light. And that's how we are. That's who all of us are. We see where we're going. It is such a gift. So that, I'm saying this because from yesterday when we had a long meditation here, we were live streaming a long meditation, and then we had a Sevaka retreat, a retreat of a group of people around the world who are just committed to this path in a certain way. That's all that's important for now. Suryani read Whispers. I had just that morning read this reading for the first time. I said, let me read it so I can meditate on it this morning and see what comes. She reads that Whispers, and it's exactly the Whispers. When you have a moment, go back and read this reading and read number 60. And then the very last thing that's read is James reading a reading from Awaken to Superconsciousness. I'm going to end this talk with it. Perfect. And then Lahari does the purification. And she speaks right to the essence of what we're talking about here. Open your eyes. Begin to tune in. And there's nothing that's hidden. And then Biraj does that chant where he says, 1,000 Vedas do declare Divine Mother's everywhere. And once we start knowing that, once we see it, we can't quit seeing it. The Gita says, and this talking about samadhi, now I'm only quoting the Gita, I'm not speaking from experience, but I am speaking from my own little experience, which I am so grateful for. But the Gita says, when you get a glimpse of the divine, it's more than 1,000 suns. It's everywhere. It's huge. Sri Ram Prasad says, my mother everywhere stays. God's everywhere in every experience. There's no hiding, but we have to get there. We have to work there. You know, the couple of visits ago to Los Angeles. So much is happening in life right now. I said, I'm in this perfect karmic storm, which is what it feels like. So a lot of physical karma. In fact, I'm glad I can quote Keshava back to you right now. I wrote to Keshava. He wanted to get together with me to talk to me about something. I was in Los Angeles. And I wrote him back and I said, you know, Keshava, I was bit by a stingray today. I mean, of all things. And I'm telling you, for those of you that don't know, it is a bad sting. I said bit, which is what I was thinking. It's really bad. I mean, subsequent to that, people have said kidney stones, labor, like delivering a child, and stingray stings. They're in the same category. It was painful on top of everything. The minute I could, I burst out laughing. I was up at the first aid station because you have to soak your foot in 110 degree water. I was there for a couple of hours doing that. But I just thought, really? I mean, really? Okay, I'm going to get with this. A stingray bite? Who would have thought? So I wrote to Keshava. I mean, on top of everything, that's going on. And I said to him, do you mind if we put it off for a day or two? I was bit by a stingray today. And he writes me back and he says to me, do you mean a sting, a stingray sting? I thought, yeah, that's what I mean. He said, my, my, you're really being industrious in your karmic quest these days. It was so funny. But the point is, and this is really the point, by God's grace, because the more we open, the more we realize that we, you know, and it's, I'm interrupting myself, but I want you all to remember, I'm always coming back to the point. Each time I've come back, as Tarnava said today so beautifully about that song, it's a children's song. I'm going to tell the truth. I was outside of the temple trying to meditate and go deep, and I heard them practicing the song. I wasn't listening. But you know the melodies like this, and I thought, oh no, they're going to play that right before I have to get up and give this talk. Not something deep, and there's something really uplifting. That's what I said to myself. Then Tarnava tells the truth. Melody is everywhere, and it's the sound of Om. And that is the truth. It's a vibration. You know, there are people who say to me, it's a vibration that we are constantly trying to tune into. That's why a guru is so important, because he holds that vibration for us. As we say, like a tuning fork, we're drawn to the guru, and we start vibrating to his frequency. And that's the only place, the only way that we can know the truth, that we can attain self-realization, which is this soul remembering its unity with cosmic consciousness. That's what self-realization is, true memory. It's the regaining of that oneness. When Master called this church the Ananda Church of Self-Realization, what a great affirmation for all of us. But I started to say, so many times people have said to me, you always talk about meditation, not just me, all of us. Isn't there some other way? No, I'm sorry to tell you. There is no other way. But just listen to this about meditation. The first technique that we teach is Hong Sa. When we get deep in that technique, it's a watching the breath technique. You just watch your breath is all you do. But of course, it gives your mind something to do other than being everywhere out there. It begins to bring it in here, where we can actually find truth. So we attain a state of peace. Peace is one of the qualities of, it's a divine manifestation. It's not being peaceful on occasion. It's being peace. And when we are peace, we are in tune with God. And then we move on, and eventually, many of you know, some of you don't, but you're on your way, we are initiated into a technique called Kriya Yoga. Kriya Yoga, when perfected, brings us to a state of joy, of being joy, another manifestation of divine consciousness, means we are one with God. When we practice the Om technique, when we get to that point, when we're listening for the sound of Om, melody, melody is everywhere, because Om is that sound of every atom in creation vibrating. Every atom in creation is God himself. When we're hearing Om, we are with the divine. There's nothing but meditation. Meditation takes us right there. That is the way. There is no other way. Put it down, quit looking, and come and meditate. Take a class, take Raja Yoga, get initiated into Kriya. If you're already meditating, add 15 minutes one day a week. See what it feels like. If you're a Kriyaban and you're practicing a certain number of Kriyas, put one day aside where you double that number. Do whatever we can do. And every one of those, every effort, just dislodges. I've been saying it a lot because it's so clear to me. That's the truth. Because I'm having that experience of what does it really mean when Alan and I join hands, join hearts, find each other in God. Every time we loosen a little bit of that kundalini, it's one step closer, one step closer. We have these great tools. God is desperately trying to show us the truth, desperately. Every avatar he sends from a life of whatever. I'm sorry, I'm blocking on the words. I'm going to read them to you in a few minutes. Of infinite joy and freedom in God. These avatars come back. That's God himself saying, let me show you the truth. God doesn't hide the truth. We hide from the truth. There's a big difference there. Turn around, look for the light, and follow it. Otherwise, you are living a life of misery. Everything that's going on will only look bad, difficult, painful. Now, a stingray sting is a small thing, as life goes. Even one that's still infected 3 weeks later. It's a small thing. I know that. I know that two ruptured discs is a small thing. Honestly, even if it requires surgery, I understand. But you know, there is a part of me that says to myself now, I can extrapolate that out, and I can't find what would be a big thing. I can only find in my mind, we'll see when I'm tested, but this is the truth. This is what happens with just a little bit. I feel very humble about this. But I extrapolate and I think, nope, I'd be okay. Because it's all God. If I decide to experience that as the divine, that's it. It's so simple. It's so utterly simple. And it's true. Let me close now by reading this from Awaken to Superconsciousness. The seventh stage on the path is called dhyana, or meditation. Dhyana signifies that stage when the mind, calm and fully receptive, loses itself in the light or in some other divine attribute and finds its ego consciousness dissolving in that light. If one is communing with Om, the sound vibration is experienced in the entire body. The soul marvels in this realization. This is what I am, not a physical body, but a blissful manifestation of Om. The light that one beholds in deep meditation, or the sound that one hears, or the love, or the joy, redefine one's self-awareness. One recognizes oneself as a manifestation of infinite truth and longs to become absorbed in it. Spiritual awakening is an unlearning, finally, in the sense of being a process of divine remembering. Ah, yes, the soul murmurs. I recall everything now. This is what I am. Dhyana, the seventh stage, is the true state of meditation. At this point, the ego, contemplating the supernal reality, forgets its separate identity and becomes the soul. God bless you.
What is love? Is it only ours? Or does love whisper in the flowers? Flowers. Surely we, children of this world, could not love by our own powers. What is joy? Is it just a dream? Or does joy laugh in every stream? Are the clouds mindless after all? Or is joy all nature's theme? God is dead, so men say. Can't they see all life's display? Not a church binds him as its own. Not a creed makes him fully known. Foolish we if we limit him. Every atom is his throne. What is love? Is it only ours? Or does love whisper in the flowers? Flowers. Surely we, children of this world, could not love by our own powers. What is love? What is love? Is it love we touch in the flowers?